It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday morning. And as we do every Monday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5, the game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Corey Curtis from News 2. Corey, good morning. How are you?
I am perfect. Pretty darn little perfect Sunday.
I'm sure it was for you. Nice Bears win. Packers lost.
You want the Bears to win?
Doesn't happen very often.
Why do you want the Bears to win?
I'm no longer on Caleb Williams' watch. I mean, now that we've got Tyler Bagent, we can trade away the first pick for the second year in a row.
That's a good point.
Hey, he did look pretty good yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't get to see the game. I saw the result. Look, I know we're going to talk Titans, but can we just admit, just finally just put this to bed, that Tom Brady was the magic, okay? Tom Brady was the magic in New England. Belichick's got no Super Bowls without him. In fact, he hasn't even sniffed Super Bowl status without him. He stumbled across him. He's a good head coach. He's not a genius, all right? He's a very good head coach, not a genius. Without Brady, he very well has zero Super Bowls. And Josh McDaniels is not a good football coach. Josh McDaniels was awful in Denver. He is awful with the Las Vegas Raiders. He's awful. He is 100% awful. For the Raiders to lose to this Bears team that badly, I mean, he shouldn't have been allowed on the team playing back to Vegas.
I will say, though, like, impressive response under pressure from Belichick, though. Clutch performance from him. You know, Vrabel's in the owner suite yesterday. A lot of people think maybe he's the replacement for Belichick. So impressive job by Belichick pulling off that win yesterday.
That's why I thought Corey was maybe going to rip the Patriots Hall of Fame choices next, you know, like rip all the Patriots things.
No. Look, like I said, he's a good coach, but he had the greatest quarterback who ever lived, who elevated his team like no one has ever elevated a team before. Okay. You know, that doesn't mean he didn't do other good things. He built his very good defensive mind. He made some very good player selections, you know, obviously along the way. He's had some other excellent players. But Brady was the magic. Belichick wasn't the magic. Brady was the magic. There's no question about it.
I don't disagree with you. By the way, Ryan from Chicago, Tyson Bagent. So I don't know what you said.
What did I call him?
What did you call him? Tyler? Taylor? Tucker? Yeah, I don't know. But
he's the future, baby. I don't even know his
sign
name.
Him up! So I agree with what you said, Corey, but let's take it. So let me ask you, in the history of this league, when you've had great teams and champions, how many times was it the coach who was the magic over, like, the best players on those teams?
You know, that's a really good question because, I mean, if you go back to the Steelers, I mean
– oh, those teams were absurdly loaded.
They were absurdly loaded, and there was no free agency, so players couldn't go anywhere. You know, you go back to my 85 Bears, it's – maybe the greatest collection of defensive talent ever. And also, people don't realize that was the number one scoring offense in the league. You know, now Buddy Ryan and Mike Ditka, maybe the right two guys to make that all come together. And I'm not saying that Belichick didn't make Brady better, okay? I said he's a good coach. But, you know, you're right. When you go down, I mean, Jimmy Johnson is a great coach, but he assembled talent. And that's part of his brilliance, was the talent he was able to assemble in Dallas. And I say, Bill Belichick built some good football teams in New England. I can't give him credit for stumbling on Brady in the sixth round. What I can give him credit for was quickly realizing he was the man and not waffling back to Drew Bledsoe. Because there's too many teams that would do that, and he didn't. He saw that what he had in Brady, and he went with him. That is the brilliance for Belichick, to be able to move on from players to realize that there was someone better.
So, Corey, with the Titans back in action this week, you know, there's a lot going on around this football team right now with the quarterback decision that they have. The deadline is coming up. Let's just start with those two things. What are your expectations as we sit here today for, number one, who the quarterback is going to be on Sunday for the Titans, and how active do you think they could be in terms of the trading deadline?
Well, everything in my body, and I had a screaming match with Jared about this on Friday, says it needs to be Will Levis, because we've seen what they've got in Malik Willis. And yes, he was put into a tough spot. I get that. Do more. All right? Do more. Be ready. Do more. Okay? So I need to see what Will Levis has got. We know there are a lot of quarterbacks in this draft. And you have an opportunity, maybe not the opportunity that you wanted, but you have an opportunity to see what you've got, to see how he reacts in this situation. Because you don't know until you know. It's like Tyson Bagent. You didn't know what you had until you put him out there. I mean,
Jeff, we get the name right.
Thank you. I picked up the Raiders defense just because Tyson Bagent was starting. I mean, come on. And you know, that's, you know, I said the same with Brock Purdy. 49ers didn't know what they had until he got out there. And at some point, you got to put him out there. You know, Jared's argument was because the team stinks, you know, you don't put him out there. I understand that situation's not ideal, but you still learn about what you've got. You know, and we can go down the line. I mean, when these guys get in the game, you know, whether they win or lose or the team is good or bad, you learn what's in the guy when the lights are on and the bullets are flying out there. And, you know, I think that this is a good opportunity for the Titans. And Malik Willis has not created a scenario where you're like, well, you have to start Willis. And so, I mean, look, I haven't seen Will in practice in 2 months. So I don't know what he's doing out there, but I know what he was drafted to do, and we need to see if he can do it.
No, I agree with you. I didn't hear the argument between you two, but I agree with you. The idea that because things are so flawed on the offensive side of the ball that you won't get any idea or you know, I reject the idea that you're going to ruin him. I just think that's – I don't think that's typically a thing. I understand there are some examples people can point to. And I definitely reject the idea that you're not going to get any idea because of the O-line and the receivers. I mean, you're going to get some idea.
Look, this is an offense that still scored 27 points twice at home, all right? They have scored. The offensive line, there's no question, it's not perfect. But you've got Skoronski back. You've got Petit Frere back. And you've got DeAndre Hopkins. You've got Derrick Henry, okay?
Well, you should have Traylon Burks this week, too.
Okay, so these are all people we were excited about when the season started, okay? So, you've got people out there. And let's not pretend that Tannehill hasn't left some points on the board, because he has. And that's not me blaming the season on him, but there are plays he's missed. And let's see if these guys, or if Will can make these plays.
Corey, what did you make of Tennessee-Alabama on Saturday? Alabama wins 34-20. Outscores Tennessee 27-0 in the second half.
Well, it was twice where my jaw was on the floor. The first half, I was like, oh my gosh, they are kicking their tails. I mean, they physically took it to them in the first half of that game. I was very concerned after creating turnovers that they settled for field goals, though. I thought that was very that left the window open. You know, they had chances to really pad their lead. And, you know, and by the way, Joe Milton, excellent in the first half, but in the second half, there wasn't a whole lot that was excellent. And, you know, I'm really wondering what happened. I mean, was it just Alabama turned up the physicality and, you know, their physical superiority took over the football game? We had Chad Brown on the show last night, and he said that was pretty much it. He didn't think that, you know, Saban made any magical tweaks to the game. He just tuned his guys up to be more physical and take it to them. He also thought that when Milton was running kind of the scripted offense in the first half, that he was very good. And when things broke down from that, that's when he really struggled. And I guess that was the other thing is Milton wasn't good enough to push his team over the finish line. And that's not entirely blaming it on him, of course not. But, I mean, you saw in the past with Hendon Hooker, you know, he had a response for everything.
All right, two quick NFL points for you, Corey. First of all, shout out to Gover because I think he has the best. I think he has the best answer, which is Bill Walsh, the West Coast offense. Joe Montana, great player. Jerry Rice, great player. They had great players, but I do think that was an innovation that actually continues to be a part of this league. So,
few Hall of Famers on that team, though.
Yeah, no doubt, exactly. I mean, you just aren't going to find great coaches who don't have great players. Also, right. Corey, can we let's please give a round of applause for the very overrated Detroit Lions? Can we? Can we please?
Well, okay. So this is a great part of the conversation. You know, I walk in the office yesterday, and you know, somebody asked me, Corey, should I give up on the Titans? And I said, why? Because they lost last week. Should you give up on the Lions? They got murdered today by the Ravens. I mean, they got just bum rushed. So does that mean their season's over? It's such a week to week league for virtually everyone. It is a week to week league. I mean, for Patrick Mahomes, it's not a week-to-week league, all right? It's not. And I think for the Eagles' offensive line, it's not. But for virtually everyone, it's a week-to-week league. The Lions are good. They're not elite, but they're capable of beating anyone.
Right.
They're also capable of getting murdered.
But in no weeks, like last week, unfortunately, should anyone ever talk about the Lions as the top team in the NFC, which happened. Not from you, but yeah.
No, I agree. I mean, it's okay to put them in the upper tier of teams, for sure. But the Eagles, you know, are clearly, you know, up there with the 49ers. I mean, it's a two-team race.
You heard it here first. Corey Curtis says the Titans are as good as the Detroit Lions. That's what I took away from the conversation.
Yes.
That is exactly what I said. I'm so glad
I'm going with
that
it.
You put Amon Ross St. Brown and Treylon Burks together as one.
He's a huge fan of Tucker Bagent, too.
Yes, me too.
Tucker. I'll say Trey Bagent is going to lead us to at least four Super Bowls.
Yes. Corey, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Are the Packers going to win another game?
They may not, man. They are a special kind of bad.
I heard that Matt LaFleur, like the fans are ready to come at him with pitchforks.
Well, I've been ready to do that for 2 years.
Yeah, he's had the torch lit for
he sucks.
He'll be Rob Schneider. Oh no, we suck again.
Yes, pretty much. That's pretty much what it is. Corey, thank you.
Bye.
See ya. Corey Curtis, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll get back into Tennessee and Alabama coming up next. Break down the Vols loss on the road to the Tide. All that coming up. 615-737-1025, our phone number. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Tomorrow, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click. If you correctly guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game tomorrow night, you'll win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Your next chance to participate is tomorrow morning at 8:45. Speaking of the Preds, don't miss this Wednesday night Smashville live show at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs at 6 p.m. See your Predator star players up close and personal. Get autographs and pictures as well. This week's special guest, Preds head coach Andrew Brunette. Smashville Live brought to you by the Black Abbey Brewing Company. Looking forward to that coming up on Wednesday night as the Preds at home all week. They play Tuesday night against Vancouver and a few days off, and they'll have the Toronto Maple Leafs coming in on Saturday night. So we'll get into the Preds a little bit later this hour as well. Right now, taking your thoughts on Tennessee. They lose to Alabama 34-20 over the weekend. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Jason. Jason, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks. I'll have to disagree with him as far as that first half as our quarterback. It wasn't him. I mean, it was the receivers making some outstanding catches. I remember the first crossing route for Squirrel Wright, the commentator on the television, saying, well, the throw wasn't perfect, but Squirrel sure did spin around backwards and catch that ball, and you know, that's going to give him confidence. The touchdown throws to both Squirrel and the tight end was on their fingertips, and it was those balls were not on dimes. So, I mean, he's the most inaccurate quarterback that I've seen in a long time, and I'm just not going to allow people to give him any accolades. When he wasn't throwing the ball on dimes, the receivers were making some outstanding catches for him.
Yeah.
And
So he was a couple inches off on both of those throws. Those are winning throws. I mean, he was 16 for 22 for 175, two touchdowns. He also had 8 rushes for 43 yards to lead all rushers. He had an excellent first half. Excellent first half. I mean, he wasn't perfect. He was never going to be perfect this year. If Joe Milton played like that all year, Tennessee would be undefeated right now, and we'd be talking about Joe Milton in all SEC terms, you know? I mean, it's – now, look, I'll grant you that second half didn't do enough, just like Corey said, but, I mean, you know, you're talking about some completions that were a little bit off. That for Joe Milton talk, that's – I mean, you also got to keep it in the context, right?
Well, I put it in the context, but, I mean, he's a six-year senior just starting, and there's a reason for it. I mean, it – I'm ready for the next level to come up and see what we got, because I know we're stuck with him. There's no way that we're going to be able to push him out, especially with Georgia coming up. But more credit goes, at least in my opinion, from what I saw with all these guys twisting their bodies, going to their back shoulders, stretching out, fingertip catches. I give all the credit to the receivers making him look good.
Yep,
and thank you.
Thanks for calling, Jason. Appreciate it.
I did the Kaharski there and just interrupted and just started barking at the caller.
Well, look, Milton played really well in the first half. I don't know how you could watch it and not think so. Now, look, he did. He brought up a couple examples there. Squirrel White made a great catch on that crossing route. He reached back behind him, grabbed the ball.
Yep.
Squirrel White made a phenomenal catch on the touchdown. Now, you also, like, they've needed their receivers to do that. Like, they have.
Yeah, give them a chance to make a play, and they made plays.
Right. They've needed their receivers. And quite frankly, like, they need it for more than somebody else other than Squirrel White. Like, they need somebody to start making some plays out there. You know, Ramel Keaton had another drop in the game, and then he goes out and makes just this incredible over the top of the defender's shoulder catch while he's basically resting on his back type of play. And you're like, okay, well, how can you make that play and you can't make the play that's just delivered perfectly to you every time? So there's still, I think, from receivers not named Squirrel White, there's a lot of inconsistency going on out there. I mean, you know, Thornton gets in the game. I mean, you can't throw the ball better than Milton threw it to him on that play.
Yeah, that was a perfect throw.
And he dropped it. And he saw footsteps from the defender. He dropped it, and then you didn't see Thornton again, which just keep him on the bench. There's no reason to see him again the rest of the year.
Yeah, which is tough. I mean, I really thought he might be a difference maker. I mean, Milton, there were also probably, what, 6 or 7 throws? Not deep throws or anything, but they were on time, perfectly accurate completions to move the chains in the first half. So Chip from Mount Julian says, Joe, it's ifs on Milton. He's not it. He's not accurate and can't process quickly. Look, I think it's pretty clear. This is a big, big, big step down at quarterback this year. It's 1 year. As the caller said, he's a six-year senior. This is his kind of last chance. He has gotten better, like from when he was at Michigan in 2020. I think he's gotten better from 2 years ago, probably, but it's not good enough. And what you hope if you're a Tennessee fan is that this is that one in between year, and then you get back to much better quarterback play and an offense that is, I mean, you're talking about the top scoring, top passing, top overall offense in college football last year, and not that now.
No.
Not even close. So, of course, I mean, a lot of that is because Joe Milton's not good enough.
Well, and the bottom line is it may not be that good again ever.
Like, well, that's
you know,
true, too.
Even if Nico is really good, it may not be that good again ever. Now, it probably won't have to be that good again ever as well if you continue to build the roster the way that they're building it. But, I mean, certainly that's the hope if you're a Tennessee fan, is that the quarterback play next year is better. But, like I said, I mean, you brought up the numbers in the first half. I thought Milton was good in the first half. I didn't think he was, like, terrible in the second half. He just was not the he's not good enough to be the answer when things aren't going right around him. Like, there's got to be a threat from the running game. You do need your receivers to make plays for you down the field that they just really didn't have the opportunity to make in the second half. I don't think anybody would argue that's watched Milton play that he is good enough to carry the team. He's not. And he was not good enough, certainly, to overcome that wave of momentum going against them in the second half.
Right. I mean, he's making some more plays on that drive that the 4th-and-1 gets stuffed. But I agree with J.D. from Brentwood. He says, I think the biggest drawback of Milton's inconsistency is how Heupel calls plays. It's clear they don't trust him inside their own 20. Agree. And only safe throws in the red zone going in. I agree with that, too. And look, Joe Milton.
The thing is, though, like, they dialed up two plays on Saturday inside the 20. and he missed them both. Dylan Sampson's wide open in the end zone. He misses the throw.
Yeah.
Jacob Warren's wide open in the end zone, and he misses the throw. Like, you can't do that.
Right. Now, they came with a blitz, and that pass to Castles was fantastic.
Yep.
You know, so, I mean, it was a lot better than you're used to seeing, but I agree that there is overall lack of trust. The thing is, if you go to Nico, you're probably going to have at least that same level of mistrust for the true freshman. I mean, it's just not going to be great. So, from here, you got to keep playing great defense. You got to get back to Jalen Wright carrying the mail. And then you hope Milton first half at Alabama is more the norm, and they're going to win a lot of games still.
Well, look, you know, Jalen Wright, we asked the question leading into this game, had Tennessee's offense running the ball shown you enough where you feel like they can run on everybody? Well, the answer is no. They can't run on everybody. We found that out.
I mean, not that 133 is a bad day of running the ball, but a lot of that was Joe.
A lot of that's Joe Milton. I mean, he had 59 yards, I said it heading into the game. They need to lean into him running the football more than they have, and they did that
keep
on Saturday. So that's something that you got to keep doing if your hype on the ball is moving forward here. Look, I think they're going to have an opportunity to run the ball well against Kentucky and Missouri. Georgia, we'll see. I have my doubts. You'll be at home in that game, but we'll see. Milton is going to be the starter heading into the Kentucky game. Like, I think there's now an idea, and this is where we're at in the season now. The fan base is like, well, you've lost two games. The race for the SEC East is over, which it is. And the race for the college football playoff is over, which it is. So let's go ahead and make the quarterback switch and get Nico some reps. And I understand that thinking from the fan base. The coaching staff, meanwhile, is like, well, okay, there's still an opportunity to win 9 or 10 games this year. They may not get there, but there's the opportunity to do that. And does Joe Milton give you the best chance to win? Up until this point, it's clear that they think he does. I don't know that I see that changing right now. Now, again, I said this earlier, and I believe it. If Milton goes out there really in any one of these games and just totally stinks it up and they lose to a Kentucky or they lose to Missouri or even the Georgia game. Like the Georgia game, given the timing of the year, if you lose that game and he's really bad – I mean, you've got, like, Vanderbilt after that. So maybe it changes heading into that. I do think Milton is still one bad performance away from his job maybe getting called into question. But yeah. It's not happening right now.
Yeah, I agree. One bad in a loss, I think that it's possible. But, yeah, like this week, he's going to get the start. And I think he should. And the whole problem with all of it is, and again, it's kind of like Levis, but I don't know, like, where they think Nico is right now.
Right.
But I know that the plan is Nico starts next year.
Right. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line. Welcome in Justin. Justin, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, guys. How are y'all doing?
We're good.
Good.
I just want to touch base on what y'all have been talking about with Joe Milton and Nico and stuff. You know, I believe that any quarterback you put in the system, they're going to be good. So, Joe Milton, you know, the way that Josh Heupel runs the offense, they throw in the flats a lot, they throw some screens, they run do this and that. So he's going to have a pretty good completion rate right there. But when he throws downfield, that's where a lot of his inconsistencies come from. He's just not putting it right where he needs to put it. Now, the throw to Squirrel White, you know, in the end zone, that was a good throw. That was a, you know, NFL throw. He put it right where he needed to put the ball in order for Squirrel to catch it. Squirrel just made a great catch. But going forward, you know, I think Nico does need to start at some point in time. The kid, I hate it that he worked his butt off all offseason before he came to Tennessee in the Polynesian Bowl and, you know, playing the 5-on-5s or 7-on-7s, whatever it was. I mean, he worked his tail off. And, you know, if he is the $8 million guy with the NIL deal, you know, I'd love to see this guy in there and start playing. I'd hate for him to go. I don't think he will. But if you know, if Joe Milton don't look good against Kentucky, I think Josh Heupel needs to make that decision and get Nico in there and get him some playing time.
Yep, thanks for the call, Justin. Appreciate it.
That brings up one thing I've seen some from Vols fans about Nico that I think is so off base, which I think we can get into next.
Yep, we'll get into that coming up next. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Your thoughts on Tennessee and Alabama. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keiser here with you on this Monday morning. Got some tickets to give away to see the Preds take on the Vancouver Canucks tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Be caller number 3 615-737-1025. Our phone number, caller number 3, will win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Vancouver Canucks tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. 615-737-1025. Joey, a point you wanted to make on the Nico discussion that you think Tennessee fans may be a little bit off base on.
Well, caller made some good points there, but I heard that, and I've seen this a little bit, which is, you know, I hope he doesn't leave and all this stuff. Guys, I mean, Nico, from the absolute start, everything he said, they've said, his family said, et cetera, planned that this year he was going to be sitting behind Joe Milton. Now, look, at some point, if Milton really struggles and you feel like you're ready, might you be antsy to get out there and all that stuff? Sure. If you're a competitor, you want to get out there. But this idea that Nico thought he was coming in here and starting, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, my God, Milton's starting instead? Like, he knew the situation.
There's some other reasons why he's not leaving.
Well, There's that, too. Yeah. I mean, now, granted, you know, you might be able to, like, go somewhere else, and maybe. Who knows? Hey. The money's flying around out there. But yeah, like, this is not –
I would not be worried about him leaving too much if I was Tennessee.
Yeah. Well, right. And this is not some threat. But even apart from the NIL stuff, I mean, this is not, like, some surprise. This is what was expected and what he expected. He basically made that very clear several times, including at the Polynesian Bowl that was aforementioned there. He said something to that effect, basically. So that's not a thing. Nico's plan has been, again, you have this blueprint of recent success for quarterbacks who are three-year quarterbacks who go to the NFL. I don't know if he is that, but he could be. That's the idea. That's the hope. And, again, Stroud, Young, there's two examples recently of guys who had the 1 year,
yep,
got a little stronger in the weight room, got to know the offense, got to just get adjusted to college, and then unleash him in year two. That has always been the plan.
The one thing about the game Saturday that continues to be a huge concern for me, and I don't know how it couldn't be concerning for everybody inside that building right now, they've got to figure out why it is that they go on the road and have a stretch in a game where they just completely fall apart. We brought up, you know, 3 times in the last calendar year it's happened, you know, basically from start to finish in the South Carolina game defensively. I mean, you just couldn't stop anybody. The Florida first half this year, you couldn't tackle them. The offense looked bad. You couldn't block anybody. You were by far outclassed physically by Florida. And then, you know, this game, you look like – Tennessee looked better than Alabama in the first half. They dominated Alabama in the first half. And then it completely flipped the other way in the second half, where Tennessee had no answer for Bama. And look, some of that was self-inflicted. You know, we've talked about the fair catch on the kickoff and you having to start at the 4-yard line. The fourth down calls from Josh Heupel, especially the second one, I didn't like. I mean, I think it was a perfect opportunity to punt the football and let your defense, which to that point had been playing pretty well, try to play well continually and pin them back to start, you know, that drive inside the 20, hopefully, if you punt the ball well enough. You know, that's a bad decision by Heupel there. But this is now the third time in the last calendar year where the wheels have just totally fallen off for a stretch of a game on the road in conference play. And at this point, I mean, there's nobody else that I can put that on other than the head coach. It continually happens. You got to find a way to fix it if you're Heupel.
Yeah, for sure. He got asked about that a few times after the game, kind of downplayed the road issues, mentioned basically like communication's hard on the road. Other than that, you know, doesn't think it's a big deal. But he makes a big deal out of what the home environment does for Tennessee a lot. I mean, he starts his home pressers after a big win with a ridiculously good atmosphere, you know, talking about that. So, of course it matters. So you got to figure out how to make it matter less for you, you know, when you're in those situations, not let it snowball on you. I mean, there's a lot to that, of course. But, I mean, he also just – I feel like there were – you know, what Corey earlier was talking about, you know, Saban just had them tuned up. They changed some things. They changed some things defensively for sure. And Tennessee did not adjust. Were they too conservative? I think being pinned was part of that. But, yeah, I mean, even in that series, it's like you can't trust Milton to give you like a 6-yard, like a quick one,
yep,
get the ball out of his hands and try to get out of that. It was just run, 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 punt. So, and then you have the, to me, overly aggressive decision by him to go for it. Easy to say when it doesn't work, but I just didn't like it, the way their defense had been playing. So I don't know what it is, but that's too much now of the Vols having just total just nosediving in performance in these road games on the SEC.
Well, and overall this year, when they've had short yardage situations, they've struggled with it. Like they got to figure out a way to that when they need 2 yards or 1 yard, what's your best opportunity to get 1 yard? I don't know. It's not going to be the same thing every time. It is mind-boggling to me that they have a quarterback the size that Joe Milton is, and you don't try a quarterback sneak there. And I get it. You know, it's easy to always just point to the quarterback sneak, and I know, you know, the brotherly shove in the NFL. Everybody wants to do quarterback sneak now, so I get it. But, I mean, Joe Milton, 6'5", 245 pounds. Maybe line him up under center and see if he can sneak it.
I'd like to see it. The thing is, not only is he huge, but also when he does run, he seems to love absolutely like treating defensive backs like bugs on a windshield.
Yeah.
So I feel like he'd be pretty. I mean, some quarterbacks have a feel for that. Some don't. I'd like to see them try it because I think you'd probably have more success than the things they did in 2 fourth-and-ones on Saturday.
I would agree with that. And then there's the defensive side of things. I mean, the first drive of the second half, Alabama at that point had been doing nothing offensively for the most part. And then they pop you with the big run on the first play of the second half and then the touchdown pass that we've talked a lot about. It just felt like after that, the wind just kind of got taken out of the sails defensively, and they started to run the ball. Alabama had 16 yards rushing in the first half, and you know they end up with 138 on the ground. That's a pretty dramatic shift from one half to the next, including McClellan ended up with 115 yards on 27 carries. He got to a point in the second half where when they needed to have a big run, he made it every time.
Yeah, and that was very disappointing to see from Tennessee's defense. And some of those plays, you know, they just didn't set the edge. Like they were setting the edge in the first half, and they looked like they got tired. So some of that happens. If you get dominated and all of a sudden everything's going against you, they just didn't have the energy. But that's another thing that kind of goes to what we're talking about. On the road, it comes down to Heupel. You also need – I mean, you got to have players. You got to have leadership out there and all that stuff that tries to stem that tide too. But they just did not have the same level of intensity or effectiveness once things started going the wrong way on them.
Stem that tide. Nicely done.
Thank you. Not intended, but we'll take it. All puns.
I thought, you know, the first half, Tennessee's pass rush did a good job of getting after Milroe. I mean, there's the James Pierce Jr. play where they put him on the other side, line him up on the left side, and he just bull rushes the left tackle, makes the strip sack, the turnover. But I said it at the time, like, you know, when you get opportunities in the red zone like they got in the first half, you have to come away with touchdowns in those games on the road against Alabama. And two times they come away with field goals. And if they convert both of those, do they end up winning the game? I don't know, but that's 8 points you left on the table if you're Tennessee's offense in the first half.
Yeah, right. When those happen, I'm like, yep, this will cost them eventually. But then when they got that pick in the end zone and went right down the field and scored, and Milton handled the blitz and delivered that perfect pass to Castles, like, oh, they might actually do this. Two plays. I mean, just two plays in the second half. Right away, boom, boom. 29-yard run, 46-yard touchdown. You get them. I mean, I know, I think it was McDonald fell on the TD, but, like, also the safeties just
– they got torched.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, just run right between us. And it's just, man, as soon as that happened, the mood in the stadium totally changed, and it mattered.
It mattered, and then you have, you know, just a – it felt like they could never reel it back in, right? Like, they were unable to just stifle the momentum – in place. And, you know, Milton, even in the second half, he had some good runs where, you know, he was picking up the first down, but they could never sustain anything offensively in the second half. And now it's got people like, what do you do from here? I mean, we've been taking calls all day on it, people texting in about it. Like, if you're Heupel, do you make a switch at quarterback? Do you look ahead to next season and get Nico some reps at some point this year? While also, I mean, you're 5-2 with an opportunity. I mean, they certainly have a chance to win on Saturday against Kentucky on the road. Missouri is a good team. I don't think that's an unwinnable game for Tennessee on the road. You got Georgia coming in, and, you know, it's crazy to talk about Tennessee beating Georgia right now, given what we've seen from them to this point. But it's at home at Neyland Stadium, and Georgia has looked okay so far this year. I mean, there's still opportunities in front of you to have a good season if you're Tennessee, even though it is way more likely than not that a trip to the SEC title game is now totally dead.
Yeah. I wrote that they should win the next two games. There's some people who take issue with that. But I stand by it. I think they should win the next two games at Kentucky and Missouri. And I think they will. I think they can compete with Georgia at home with what they would, the atmosphere they'd have. They should win. The running game should go nuts against Kentucky and Missouri. And I understand not that either of those teams are like bad in that way, but most games, if you just have some semblance of balance with this offense, with those running backs, you're going to run. And then this defense should not give up a lot of points in both of those two games, I think. So we'll see.
Tennessee,
maybe I'm overvaluing Tennessee.
Tennessee, a 3.5-point favorite against Kentucky on the road on the FanDuel Sportsbook.
Okay.
What do you think of that line?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably about right. Kentucky's been pretty bad.
There's also a line for Georgia and Tennessee on the 18th on the FanDuel Sportsbook.
Yeah?
What's your guess?
My guess would be Georgia by 8.5.
You nailed it. Georgia by 8.5.
Boom. All right.
Look at you.
Hey, hey.
The Rex Road Sportsbook.
Joey the Greek.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll take your final thoughts on Tennessee and Alabama. Titans in action this week against Atlanta. Preds big win against the Sharks over the weekend. Your thoughts on all of that available on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. This week's Nashville's best deal is from Bad Axe Throwing Nashville. Go to thegamenashville.com/deals to get a $50 gift card for only $25. Bad Axe Throwing Nashville, Nashville's largest axe throwing venue, located downtown at 648 Fog Street. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Joe, as we wrap up the discussion on Tennessee and Alabama, your thoughts on Bama, now with just one loss coming to Texas. They've clearly got the path in the SEC West to get back to the title game. They got this week off, got LSU coming up after that at home. But what do you make of Alabama after this win and as it relates to them being a contender for the college football playoff?
Well, I think that they're probably going to be in Atlanta. LSU could get them. I mean, LSU could get them. Jaden Daniels can get cooking, and, you know, you never know. But, look, I like Alabama's resilience as a team. They've got a very good defense. I like Jalen Milroe. I thought that he, after a really rough start, I mean, he made some big-time plays, and I think he's turning into a pretty good quarterback. But, I mean, I look at that team, first of all, in, like, just your average year, that is absolutely not a college football playoff team. I'm sorry. Like, I just don't think they are. And I'll tell you another thing, since we can finish this on a hot take. I mean, I think the SEC's got a real chance of not being the college football playoff this year.
Ooh.
So let's this was thrown out to me by a friend of the show. I was at in Michigan a few days ago. So let's play out Washington's undefeated.
Okay.
Florida State's undefeated. Both of those are plausible. I mean, the Pac-12, Washington has some tough tests, but let's go, you know. I mean, right now I think Michigan looks really good. But, you know, someone from the Big Ten, I mean, Michigan still has to play Penn State and Ohio State. We'll see. But someone out of there is undefeated.
Yep.
Okay. Oklahoma's undefeated.
Okay.
Which is certainly plausible,
it is.
Right? And then, you know, Georgia gets through and beats Alabama in the title game. Now, I think now, I'm not even doing the Alabama part of it, but let's just say Georgia. I think right there, if you look at the SEC's performance in non-league and you look at all the other conferences, I think Georgia should be the team left out. Now, I threw this hypothetical at Staples in the press box Saturday, and he's like, Florida State would be the team that would get screwed. And he's probably right.
Even undefeated?
The ACC getting screwed at the in favor of the SEC.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he may well be right. But I think you could make a really strong case. Look at who Georgia played this year. Who did they play? Who did they beat?
I don't think that they would be – I don't think they'd leave Florida State out if they were undefeated.
But think about that scenario. So let's take that scenario, play it out to Alabama having lost to Texas, having lost to Oklahoma, Texas having lost, you know, beats Georgia in SEC title game. Alabama should not be in the playoff in that scenario. The same scenario I played out with a one-loss team that beat Georgia.
Yeah.
Now, we all know all those things that I just said, some of them won't happen.
Correct.
But, like, they're none of them are outlandish at
all.
No. I mean, the SEC this year
– it's down.
– is not very good.
Right. It's down, and the quarterback play is not good.
And that's why.
Yeah. quarterback play is bad, and that's why you're seeing it. You know, Georgia, I still think even without Bowers, Georgia is going to get to the title game undefeated. So, you know, if they lose to Alabama in the SEC championship game, how much weight gets put on that compared to the rest of their schedule, which has not been very good to this point. You know, the Pac-12, I think, is the best conference in college football this year. Washington is very good. Oklahoma and Texas, what's really going to be interesting is what I think is going to happen, which is going to be an Oklahoma and Texas rematch. And I think Texas is going to get them this time in the Big 12 title game. What do you do then? Because, look, I watched Oklahoma play Saturday. They were screwing around, almost lost to UCF.
Oh, yes.
I think they're better than what they showed on Saturday. But that's where chaos is going to come into all this, is, you know, Texas and Oklahoma having to play each other again. And what if both of them have one loss? What do you do at that point?
Right.
It's probably going to Texas, but because they would have the win over Alabama too. But that'd be an interesting one.
Well, yeah. And the Big Ten, I mean, look, Ohio State, I was impressed. I mean, I was unimpressed with Penn State. 1 for 16 on third down. And James Franklin, man, how are you – I can't believe he went for that fourth down when his defense is dominating the game. But he did.
We get lulled into this by Penn State every year. They're yes. not on that level.
No, I agree. But so Ohio State, though, like that's a pretty darn good win for Ohio State.
Yes.
You know, so – you know, what if Ohio State goes in and sneaks out a win over Michigan so that they're both one-loss teams?
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, Michigan might be the best team. And J.J. McCarthy is playing at an incredibly high level. Now, they haven't played
any. It would be great to see them play somebody
yes,
at some point.
I agree. Well, they go to Penn State. So that will be finally a legitimate opponent right. for them to play, and then we'll see. But there is that scenario. I don't think they'll lose at home to Ohio State. I think they'll be cut, dry, Michigan will be. But if they do, there's another one like that, you know. So I'm just looking at Georgia, but Georgia's like Michigan in terms yeah. of who have you played? Who did you beat? I mean, if they go into Tennessee, that's the thing. You know, it helps the SEC is if Tennessee goes to Kentucky and wins and goes to Missouri and wins. And then Georgia can go into their house, and that would be okay. Good win, Georgia.
Right.
I don't think the SEC is going to get hosed, but like this is the year where it could happen. And wow,
oh, I agree.
What a story that would be.
Well, usually there's no chance that happens. And
we're like, well, there's two. They're going to get two, right?
Right.
Are they going to get a third? I mean, not really, but like two is a much stronger possibility than them having none this year. That is not at all true.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, the quarterback plays a big part of it, but it's a really fascinating year. Joe, real quickly, Preds win 5-1 Saturday night. You want to talk about a bad team? Boy, San Jose Sharks, they're tough. Tough to watch.
That's some stat padding right there,
playing
the Sharks.
Tough to watch. I mean, it's a draft lottery system, so they may not get the number one overall pick. I am comfortable today on October 23rd saying that the worst team in the league this year will be the San Jose Sharks. They are terrible.
And they've really, like, shouldn't they be moving off that at some point here? They're not moving off that.
They're not moving off of it. Pretty bad. Preds in action tomorrow against Vancouver. Nice 8:15 start tomorrow night.
Oh,
I know you're looking forward to that one.
You're excited about that one. Tommy Novak continues to produce.
He does.
That was Luke Evangelista's goal. Was pretty sweet.
It's pretty nice.
Saw a little glimpse.
Nice assist from Pete Rogers, the assistant or the equipment manager on the play.
Right.
I messaged him yesterday. I said, "Hey, nice hands. Thanks. Appreciate it." It's good stuff. That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Junie and Big Joe coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.